up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming up featuring Earl Yalcason. He is a CFA, a wealth architect with Wealth Arch Investment Services. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started off with two truths and a lie. And then we got into how to read the tea leaves, what the market's going to be doing. More importantly, what are you going to do when the market goes down? Talked about the philosophies of great investors like Warren Buffett and how they think about and handle market corrections and market turndowns, how to think about it, and again, really how to position yourself when it happens and whether or not it's actually possible to come up with a defined, clear plan, or how it is that you are thinking about it, and again, positioning yourself for success when it comes to your allocation, when it comes to liquidity. It is all about that. And then, of course, we had some great difference-making tips as well. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Earl, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
All right. Number one, I own around 100 board games. Mm-hmm. Number two, as a kid, I went around the school collecting soda bottles to get the recycling credit to exchange them for Filipino barbecue pork skewers. Number three, I once ate 14 pieces of KFC chicken with rice in one sitting.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome. So 14 pieces of KFC with rice?
That's correct.
Nice. Okay. Well, these are great. 100 board games. They're excellent because you've given us great stories, but also important details. 100. And then it was you went and collected and recycled to buy Filipino pork skewers?
That's correct. When I was okay. In first grade.
In first grade.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 14 pieces of KFC with rice, 100 board games. I think you own way more than 100 board games, Earl.
That's correct. That was too easy. I'm just happy to pad your stats of your accuracy there. <so. laughs>
How many board games do you own?
More than 200.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Well, that is awesome. You've always been a fan?
I've always been a fan. I've always been into games. Games teach you a lot about probabilities and strategy, which is very important to investing. And actually, I also buy and sell board games, which is even much closer to investing, because if you buy a board game correctly at the right price, when you sell it, you're not going to lose money. It's the same just like investing in a stock.
Well, very cool. All right. And I think that I did know that you've always been an industrious person, even as a young man.
Yes, that's right. I started with the recycling of the soda bottles. And then in second grade, I sold snappable bracelets in different colors, different patterns to my classmates. Then as I grew older, I sold cell phones, music CDs, concert tickets, and even fireworks. So I've always been trying to find ways to make money just on the side. And but one day I turned on the CNBC channel and I saw these things go up and down. And I said, I think I could do that for a living. This is just like a game. And it's way more fun than selling, for sure. And so that's how I got my love for investing.
Nice. And where did the love of fried chicken come from? Or maybe you don't love it at all anymore.
Oh, no. I continue to love it. When I was younger, and even until today, I'm such a picky eater. When I was younger, I would only eat fried chicken and dried fish for whatever reason. So those are the only two things I would eat. And my parents had a big headache all the time. Yeah, until today, I still love fried chicken. And if any of you are near the Los Angeles area, there's a place called Howlin' Ray's. It's absolutely fantastic. So highly recommend you guys try it if you're in the area.
Well, there you go. Check out Howlin' Ray's. I love it. All right. Well done. Well, what is top of mind for you right now, Earl?
So top of mind is Warren Buffett saying, be fearful when the market is greedy and greedy when the market is fearful. And this is something similar that you spoke with one of your previous guests, Eric Mangold. And I'd like to dive in a little bit deeper, starting with just today's market environment. So if you look at many different metrics, whether it's price to earnings, price to sales, or price to cash flow, stock prices are extremely expensive compared to history. And that's despite the sales, income, and free cash flow growing significantly over the decades. Stock prices have just gone up even more, where on a free cash flow basis, that ratio is more expensive than at any time over the last 31 years. So that's number one. But how did we get here? There are four main reasons why. The first reason is the low interest rates. So interest rates have been declining from 1981 approximately all the way to 2021. In a declining rate environment, that's a big tailwind for almost any kind of investment. But what we have to keep in mind that if the environment changes where we have a new regime of rising interest rates going forward, then what's worked in the past will not work going forward. So that's the first reason. The second reason is that the money printing from the Federal Reserve has been significantly above average compared to history. So even as we sit today, even though the money supply over the last 2 years has decreased slightly, we're still significantly above long-term trends. So that's the second thing to keep in mind. The third reason and the fourth reason are kind of similar, and that is how much the government is spending. So the government, as of late last year, was spending approximately about 6% more than what they're earning. And compared to GDP, it was a 6% deficit compared to GDP. And that's very significant. With this year's bill, it's actually going to increase to more than 7%. The only times we have spent more than this level is when we're in the midst of COVID in March 2020, and also during the great financial crisis of 2008. So in other words, the government has been spending as if we are in a recession. And then the fourth reason, which is really tied to the third one, is that the government from 2008 until 2021 has been issuing, you know, occasionally checks to everybody. And if you look back through history, that hasn't happened in the frequency nor the magnitude that they've done over the last 20 years. So because there's a lot of stimulus, the markets are extremely high. And if we look through history, whether it's tulip bulbs in the 1800s, whether it's real estate in Japan, whether it's Latin American currencies, whether it's stocks in the US, any kind of super expensive bubble market will correct. The only question is when. That is what I don't know. That is what nobody knows the answer to. And the best thing we can do as investors is understand where we are today and what are the possibilities for the future. And there are many possibilities. There's actually a very wide range of future outcomes that could occur. But I can discuss a few of them. One of them would be if, for example, the current administration is able to lower corporate tax rates down from 21 to 15, that's going to create an additional runway for stocks to move higher. If, for example, the current administration is able to appoint a new Fed chief, where the new Fed chief will lower interest rates down back close to zero, then that's another reason why the stock market could rise even further. However, there are also other possibilities where the stock market could actually start going down, whether it's a year from now or 5 years from now, one of which would be tariffs. And tariffs are, I think people are a little bit complacent today about tariffs, and there are three main reasons why. The first reason is that there was inventory stocking done earlier this year, and that should last us for a few more months at most. The second reason is that the companies themselves aren't electing to pass on the price increases yet, whether it's because they want to or they can't, which is the third reason. So they are simply waiting for a few more months before passing that on. And if prices do increase, the average person, middle-class family in America, is going to be spending several thousand dollars more. So that's going to create a drag on consumption. Tariffs will also create a drag on employment. And therefore, we could see the economy weaken towards the second half of the year. But of course, as I mentioned earlier, anything can happen and no one can predict the future. However, what I would like to share with your audience is just to keep in mind the different multiple potential future outcomes there are and assess your portfolio and your investments, whether they can thrive under either scenario.
Well, that sounds good to me. That's what we human beings want. We're looking for some direction, some kind of certainty. So please.
Yeah. So in terms of like my advice, my difference making tip, what I would say is that one, just keep in mind that the cardinal sin of investing is panicking or selling your investments when everybody else is doing it. So my advice is to make sure to review your financial situation. If you are retired or about to retire, make sure you have enough liquidity to support you during this transition phase or during your retirement. Make sure you have extra to cover just in case that the market correction actually happens, whether it's a year from now or 5 years from now. And don't be afraid to be defensive. So one example I would give, and there are infinite number of potential futures, but this is just something to keep in mind. Hypothetically, if you had or anybody has $100,000 as a round nice number to make an example off of, and the market continues moving higher because of lower tax rates, continued corporate growth, lower interest rates, and whatever reason, the 100,000 grows to 160,000 4 years from now, which is a fantastic return. That's easily a double digit return on average per year from a significant market rally over the last 2 years. But if, for example, we had a 40% market correction, your 160,000 actually goes down to 96,000. If we had a 50% correction, the 160 goes to 80, and 60% corrections happen all the time. The S&P 500 was down approximately 60% from 2000 to 2002. It was down another 60 plus percent from 2007 to early 2009. And most people forget that. So if hypothetically you were to put your money in a high yield savings account, a CD or a treasury bill today, earning 4 to 5%, and a large market correction happens within a year or 4 or 5, you'd probably be better off, staying defensive. But of course, as I want to emphasize, there are infinite possible outcomes. This is just one of them. But it's just, I want to make sure that people listening to this podcast, they're not going to be afraid to play some defense, to have some defense in your portfolio. I'm not saying that you should go 100% cash, because that would be timing the market, and you don't want to do that. Nobody has a great track record of timing the market. But on the margin, if let's say your normal allocation to stock should be 60%, why not just drop it down to 50%? Have some ammunition to fire, so that when the market is panicking or freezing, you can pounce and buy lower prices. And that's when the big money is made. The big money is made not when the market's going up. It's when the market is going down, and then you become aggressive. And if you are not comfortable, and you have to be honest with yourself, if you don't have the courage or the chutzpah to be buying when everyone's selling, then you need to consult an advisor that has a history of doing that.
Isn't that the truth? It is really hard when things are going down to start buying.
Yeah, when I was working for the Capital Group, there were three of us hanging around together all the time. And this was in 2007. And so in 2007, we could already see the writing on the wall where the real estate bubble was going to burst. And then we always told ourselves, we always promised that when the bubble bursts, we are going to be aggressive. And in early 08, I was telling family and friends and, you know, to start lightening up on their stocks. And when at the late 2008, when stocks actually started crashing, even though repeatedly all the time we would say we would be buying when stocks would go down, only two of the three of us, and I'm one of the two, were buying when stocks went down. And so even if you work in the industry, even if you have so much experience, even if you're so smart, it is not easy to buy when everyone's panicking.
It's such a fascinating thing. And even under the context of you're talking about 2007, you said from 2001 to 2002 or 2000 to 2002, the S&P actually dropped by 60% and then it did it again. And yeah, that's actually been a number of years, almost 10 years at this point. Well, no, you get the idea, almost 8 years. So it's been a long time and it could certainly happen again, but we just don't know. And do you refer to that as dry powder? Do you think about it that way?
Yes.
Or you talk about it as just being defensive?
Yeah, I absolutely think of it as all of the above. Dry powder, defensive, and yeah, I call it gunpowder when I talk to my clients. So yeah, we definitely want some gunpowder to fire so that when bargains are abound, you have the ammunition. You want to stock up right now.
Yeah. And everything is always going to be dependent on somebody's individual situation and their preferences.
Absolutely.
And their personality. That being said, you talked about if you are nervous, if you're thoughtful and thinking that the market could have some kind of a correction again, if your current stock allocation is 60%, consider dropping that down to 50%, whatever sum of money that might be. And then do you have thoughts on targeting a certain number of, is it stocks? Is it ETFs? Is it sectors where you say, if I see this individual security or this sector go down by X number of percent, that's when I'm going to buy. So you almost make a plan in advance.
Yeah, it's really hard to make that advance because there are infinite outcomes. But the general rule we go back to what I mentioned at the beginning, which is what Warren Buffett says, right? So be fearful when the market is greedy and greedy when the market is fearful. So what you're trying to assess when to actually get into the markets, aside from, of course, you have to take a look at what the news are, what the data flow is. But the general idea is that if you see people really being scared and really selling stocks, then I would say that's the time to buy. In terms of a number, I would say no one can absolutely pick the bottom. So I would advise trying to go in slowly and not try to wait. I'm at 60% down, then I'm going to put all my cash in. I don't recommend that because no one can pick the bottom. I would say as the market starts going down significantly at 30%, put a little bit in, 40, put a little, then maybe everything in.
It is an impossibility. I can remember during the Great Recession, the Great Financial Collapse, whatever it is that we're calling it these days, making the mistake of watching Fast Money, and just because you could not during that time, and watching all the arrows go red and people trying to talk about what the bottom is and are we there? And I don't know that we ever found it. I think we finally did, obviously, at some point.
Yeah.
But even the sharpest minds, even the people that talk about it full time for a living 24/7 have absolutely no idea. So I think that taking that more measured approach and just being prepared so that when people are really freaking out, then you can utilize some of that dry gunpowder.
Yeah, just understand that nobody knows, and just also understand the situation where a lot of stocks, they are overpriced. And so just be careful, because a lot, I've spoken to a few people recently that they think as index funds are safe, you know? So like I said, in 2008 alone, from 2007 to 2009, the market dropped 60%, but the S&P on one single year dropped 40%. So if you own an index fund and it drops 40%, that's not at all. And there are many times through history where you look through how the S&P 500 has done before the bubble burst. After it, 5 to 9 years, you would have made zero money. For example, if you owned Microsoft in 1999, you would not have made money for 15 years, from 1999 to 2014. If you own the best and brightest of the U.S. American companies in 1972, Kodak, IBM, American Express, Coca-Cola, Exxon, the Nifty 50, they call, you would not have made money for about 16 years, which is a very long time. So all I'm saying is that when prices are expensive, you have to be cautious, just like what Warren Buffett says.
Got it. So are you sitting shoulder to shoulder with your clients, or are you sometimes, or are you just making the trades for them? How does it, how do you usually interact with your clients?
Yes. So there are a lot of unique things that I do with my company. The biggest unique thing about what I do is that 100% of my net worth outside of my emergency and opportunity fund is invested the same way as my clients. So if they own a stock, I own it. I own it as well. So if they make money, I make money. If they lose money, I lose money as well. So that's number one. And there was a Morningstar study actually done where more than half of mutual fund managers don't own even a single share in their own fund, which is absolutely crazy. The other unique thing that I do with my clients is that I write a lot of investment updates and share them with my clients. So on average, my clients receive 2 updates a week, and there are some weeks where it's even 5. So for every investment that we own, I write up a report after the earnings release, and I tell them, this is what happened, this is what management said, this is what I think, this is my new valuation, and this is my rating. This is, we should buy, hold, or sell the stock. After a big macro event, like announcement of the tariffs, you can betcha, I wrote up a report. This is how the tariffs would impact every single investment that we own, and so on and so forth. So clients are well informed exactly what I'm thinking, what I'm planning to do. And in fact, usually 15 minutes after I buy or sell something, I tell them, this is what I did, and these are the reasons why, and I bought or sold it at this price. So they are informed every single step of the way. They understand exactly what I'm trying to do and what I'm planning to do in the future.
And do you love every minute of this?
I absolutely love it. This is my passion. It was a long time ago when I turned on that CNBC channel, and I still love it. I mean, I play a lot of board games. I enjoy golf, but this is my passion. When there's an exciting thing happening, I stay up late, way past midnight, trying to do some research, trying to figure out how I can make myself and my clients more money. And so it's going back to when I was in first grade. It's fun making money, you know. And what's more fun making money than using your brain to do it, rather than in the past when I would have to go door to door and drop flyers for fireworks. So it's significantly better just to use my brains.
That is way better. And it is crazy that half of fund managers don't have Absolutely. Any money in their own funds. Just buy one share so you could say that you own
it. I know.
How hard is that?
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy.
Well, Earl, this has been fantastic. I appreciate you coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Well, thank you so much, George. This has been an honor and pleasure to be on your show, and hopefully your audience will benefit from it. I've created a special URL for your audience members to visit to learn more about me. It's mywealtharch.com/AMS. And let me spell that. It's myweeltharch.com/AMS.
Excellent. I love it. And what's the website? Just on in general?
It would be mywealtharch.com.
Perfect. All right.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Earl your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to mywealtharch.com, and then you can go to the special landing page, mywealtharch.com/AMS.
Yeah.
And check out all things Earl and what he's working on, and see if there's an opportunity for you to work together with him. Thanks again, Earl.
Thank you, George.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are, so act accordingly.
The information provided is for educational purposes only and should not be considered personalized financial advice. The views expressed are my own and do not constitute financial, legal, or tax advice. All investing involves risk. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Please consult a qualified advisor before acting on any information shared.